Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it is April 28th. And don't forget, we have an exam next time. All right, where's my folder? What are the chapters that are on the exam? Let me just say it in case people are interested. We have chapters 13, 14, 15, 16, and 18. That is central nervous system, peripheral nervous system, autonomic nervous system, special senses, and heart. And we're going to finish heart today. Okay. And then that just leaves a couple chapters left for the last test during finals week. All right, so here is your sign-in sheet. Please sign in. And I think the drop date is coming up. It's the first. Yeah, it's probably the first for me, too. So if sometimes I extend it a little bit for faculty. All right, so if you have a lot of absences from lecture, I might have to drop you. So if you have a lot of absences, all right, then you might want to just see me, make sure I don't drop you by accident. But that's why we sign the sign-in sheet every time, right? Okay, so that's your responsibility to do that. So look at this assignment right here. Do next time 100 points. Oh, let's not make it 100 points. Let's make it 1,000 points. Creation of stars, star birth. Oh, guess what? That's not this class. So forget that. But we do have to use the board. First thing this morning, what do we want to do this morning? Heart. We want to trace a drop of blood through the entire circulation. Through the heart, we want to label all the chambers. We want to tell what the composition of blood is, label all the valves, right, and blood vessels as well. How many chambers does the heart have? Four, and that was a homework assignment for you, right? So you probably spent some time with that already. How many valves does the heart have?
Four.
Okay. What kind of blood vessel takes blood away from the heart? What type of blood vessel brings blood to the heart? A vein. And then there's one other type, which I didn't talk a lot about yet, but we will, especially in the next chapter. But there's another kind of blood vessel besides an artery or a vein. It has a different function. So the name is a capillary. What's the function of a capillary? Exchange can take place because capillaries are very thin. So let's get started just writing this down. So I want you to be able to list in correct anatomic order these various structures. All right, so where do you want to start? Where do you want to start in the circulation? Does not matter to me because you got to go around in a circle because no matter where you start, you got to end up there again, right? So it doesn't really matter too much. Where you want to start?
At the heart.
At the heart. Okay, but the heart's got a lot of places. So what specific place would you like to start at?
Right atrium.
Okay, let's start with right atrium. So we got a drop of blood, and I'm just going to abbreviate RA for right atrium. What's the state of the blood when it's in the right atrium? And yeah, I'm going to say deoxygenated, right, or oxygenated, but remember that's kind of a relative term. There's still a lot of oxygen in deoxygenated blood, just not as much as when it's really oxygenated. So right atrium is what? We're going to say deoxygenated blood. All right, from the right atrium, what's the next structure that blood has to pass by? Okay, it's going to go into the right ventricle. I like that, but we're missing something. Don't let me miss anything because I'm still half asleep. What does it have to pass before it can go from the right atrium to the right ventricle? The tricuspid atrioventricular valve, right? All right, so I'm just going to put tricuspid AV valve. And what's the state of the blood? Deoxygenated, right? So I'm just going to put a little quotation mark meaning IBID. Just follow that, place it down on the next line. Okay, tricuspid valve. Now what's the next structure? Right ventricle. What's the state of the blood? Deoxygenated. It's the same because something hasn't happened. What hasn't happened? Exchange hasn't happened because you haven't been through a capillary yet. Okay, so that's the way I think about that. Right ventricle. Now where does blood go? It's going to go to the lungs, but it's got to pass some things before it gets to the lungs. The pulmonary, semi-lunar valve. So I'm sort of abbreviating it just a little bit so I don't run out of board space. What's the state of the blood as it passes the pulmonary semi-lunar valve? It's still deoxygenated. All right, then after the pulmonary semilunar valve, it goes to the pulmonary trunk, you could say, or pulmonary artery. I don't care too much which one you say. All right, so we're going to say pulmonary artery. And, of course, that's going to take blood away from the heart, but where is it going to take it to? The lungs. But since it's in the pulmonary artery, it hasn't gotten to the lungs yet, so what's the state of the blood here? It's still deoxygenated, so I'm just going to put quotation marks. All right, pulmonary artery, then we go to the lungs. Now we're in the lungs. What kind of blood vessels are in the lungs? Capillaries. All right, so capillaries are in the lungs. And what's the state of the blood in the lungs? Okay, well, it's kind of like right in between. As it's going in, it's deoxygenated. When it's leaving, it's oxygenated, right? So what I would maybe like for you to put in right here is what? O2 goes in, CO2 goes out of the blood, right? And what do we call that process? That is exchange. All right, key term. So what kind of blood vessel allows for exchange? Capillary. Okay. All right. So after the lungs, then where does the blood go? Pulmonary vein, right? It's got to get to the heart somehow. So then it goes pulmonary vein. All right, so I don't want to forget any of these things. Pulmonary vein. Now, what's the state of blood in the pulmonary vein? Are you sure it's a vein?
I'm positive.
You're positive. Good. I'm glad I couldn't trick you. All right, so it's not deoxygenated. It is what? Oxygenated. And it switches right here in these capillaries. So pulmonary vein. And then we're going to come back over to here. After the pulmonary vein, where does the blood end up?
Left atrium.
All right, left atrium, and it's still oxygenated blood. Left atrium, blood goes through? Yeah, so another atrioventricular valve, right? So we might want to say bicuspid, right, / mitral valve. That's on the left side of the heart. And what's the state of the blood? That's still oxygenated. Then to the? Left ventricle, it's still oxygenated. Left ventricle pumps blood past the aortic semilunar valve. It's still oxygenated. And then where does it go after it passes the semilunar valve?
Aorta.
And what kind of blood vessel is the aorta? That's an artery, right? Because it's taking blood away from the heart. But here's your classical understanding of an artery, is that it what has oxygen in it. Now, after the aorta, where does it go?
Everywhere
in the body except the lungs. All right, and these are what we call, what kind of capillaries? Systemic. What did I put over here? Lung capillaries. Ah, okay. Ah, that's a little tacky. What should we really call these?
Pulmonary.
All right, because that's the pulmonary circulation. This is the systemic circulation, right? So systemic capillaries, right? And then what happens in these capillaries? Exchange, which means what? O2 goes
out,
CO2 goes in. That could only happen in what kind of blood vessel? Capillary, only in a capillary, only in a capillary. All right, and then after the systemic capillaries, what happens? All right, oh, it's getting really long right here, but it goes to the, what are the big vessels attached to the heart? Yeah, so we're going to say superior vena cava or inferior vena cava. Let's see, systemic capillaries? Then it's actually going to go back to the heart, right? The pulmonary veins come back from the lungs, the pulmonary circulation. The vena cava drain blood from the systemic circulation, okay? And from here, okay, what's the state of blood in the superior and inferior vena cava? Deoxygenated. Okay, and then where does it go? Where we started from. Okay, right there. So those are all the things, knowing all the functions. So make sure you can draw that, and if during the test you need to draw that out to answer a question, you know, you're, I think, probably welcome to do that. But you should have that in your mind. Okay, so we got, did we get all four valves? Let's just double check. Here's a semilunar valve. Where's another semilunar valve? Ah, here's another semilunar valve. Here's a tricuspid. Here's the bicuspid. Yeah, we got all four. Good. Aortic semilunar valve. I know the abbreviation does. Yeah, I know it looks weird a little bit. Okay. Ah, no SI today. Okay. Okay. Oh, there's no projector either. Okay, let me turn the projector on. Oh, I thought I had this on for you guys to look at while we were doing the diagram. Or this flow diagram. Okay. But that's okay if you had a picture in your mind. That's even better. All right, so as the projector is turning on, what things do we still have to talk about today? We talked about all the valves, the layers, blood flow through the heart, we're done. So make sure you know the two kinds of circulations in the heart. This is a really good exam figure that you see appearing on the screen. Make sure you know that, but you probably had to know that extremely well for the practicum that you just took. Anyway. Okay, and I think we went over this last time. Anyway. All right. I want to now go on to show you something about the fibrous skeleton of the heart. So most of the heart that we see right here, like this layer, what is this layer right here that I'm pointing to? Myocardium, right? It's made up of myocytes, and these are the contractile cells of the heart, and these myocytes can also conduct electrical information, right? They can transmit electrical information from one cell to the next, right? So that all of the cells of the myocardium are connected together electrically, so for the heart to beat, as a unit, only one cell has to be stimulated electrically, and then that electrical signal can stimulate the whole heart to beat. And that's a really good thing. All right, so let me see why that is. Do I have a picture of why that is? Do we have any histology left on this chapter? Maybe not very much. I don't see any histology, and I don't want to go find it, but can you remember what a heart cell looks like? Is it long and linear? It has intercalated discs, and it is branched, right? One component of an intercalated disc is a gap junction, and that gap junction allows for electrical signals to pass from one cell to another. So there are electrical synapses between all the cells of the heart. So that's really important for the heart, because in order for the heart to pump blood, it should contract as a unit to eject blood. Okay, that's not such a good thing for skeletal muscle. Skeletal muscle doesn't have gap junctions in it. Why is that a good thing that skeletal muscle doesn't have gap junctions or electrical synapses? It has chemical synapses. Yeah, for instance, if you were to contract your biceps brachii, if there were gap junctions between all the skeletal muscle cells, you contract one muscle, your whole body would go into spasm. It would be really hard to move around, right? We'd just be like a slug moving across the floor, right? Okay, but the heart is different. It should contract as a unit. All right, but there's one other thing that happens in the heart that's really important, and that is the job of the atria, these superior chambers right here, the job of these guys is to pump blood into the ventricles, okay? And the atria have to contract first before the ventricles. All right, so and then after the blood in the atria is pumped into the ventricles, then the ventricles can pump blood into the arteries coming off the base of the heart. So the heart actually kind of contracts in two different steps. First the atria contract and then the ventricles. All right, and don't forget, blood can only flow in one direction because of what?
The valves,
yeah, that separate the various chambers out. Okay. So what I said is mostly true, with one exception. There is a fibrous skeleton right at the junction between the atria and the ventricles, and that fibrous skeleton is like a big, strong tendon. So it's more connective tissue. It's not muscle tissue. And that connective tissue does not have any gap junctions in it. Okay, so electrical signals cannot pass from the atria into the ventricles. The atria are electrically isolated from the ventricles because of that fibrous skeleton. All right, so let me show you what a picture of that fibrous skeleton looks like. Here's where it is. It's right in the plane between the atria and the ventricles. And the skeleton right here can't conduct. Right? The other function of this fibrous skeleton is, since it's really, really tough, it helps anchor all of the heart valves. So all of these valves are pretty much in the same plane. So the valves are stuck inside the heart and secure. They can't move around. All right? So that's another important function of the fibrous skeleton. Also, the muscle, the myocardium of the heart, is attached to the fibrous skeleton that kind of acts like an insertion point for those muscles. And so that just stabilizes the activity of the heart because of that. Okay. All right, so let's now actually talk about some of the electrical properties of the heart. All right, and we call that the conduction system. So if we were to take somebody's heart, right, or a heart from any kind of mammal, just like Raiders of the Lost Ark, remove it from a body and set it on the table, guess what would happen to that heart? Well, it eventually would die, okay? But for a period of time, the heart would actually sit on the table and contract, right? It would beat on its own. So the heart doesn't need nerves to tell it when to contract. It has its own autorhythmicity, right? And the nerves that go to the heart just can adjust the heart rate, but they can't really stop the heart from beating, or so the innervation is not absolutely necessary. So because nerve cells and muscle cells share a lot of similarities, right, the specialized muscle cells of the heart that we call nodal tissue, nodal tissue as opposed to contractile tissue, all of these cells right here, right, are muscle cells, but some are more specialized to transmit electrical information and then less specialized to contract. And those cells are what we call nodal cells. So let's take a look at where we find nodal cells. The nodal cells control how the heart contracts because it spreads the electrical signal around in the heart. Right at the junction of the superior vena cava and the right atrium right here, there are some specialized nodal cells that can spontaneously create these electrical signals. And we call that the sinoatrial node, or more commonly the SA node. We just abbreviate it, SA node. The SA node has the highest rate of generating these signals that tell the heart to contract. Right, so the SA node controls the rate or the rhythm of contraction of the heart. And once these cells depolarize or create an electrical signal, that electrical signal moves from one cell to another through the gap junctions between the cells, and that electrical signal then stimulates both atria to contract. So the way the heart contracts is that first both atria contract. That's the first thing that happens. And that's because the SA node is in an atrium, and there is another name for the SA node. That's called the pacemaker of the heart. All right, the pacemaker. That sets the rhythm of the heart. Okay. Now, these electrical signals can't just move into the ventricles. Why can't electrical signals just move from an atrium, like the left atrium, into the left ventricle down over here? What's stopping electrical signals from moving from left atrium to left ventricle? The fibrous skeleton or the fibrous myocardium can't conduct those electrical impulses. All right, but nonetheless, the heart should be coordinated, and there's a special pathway that allows these signals to get into the ventricle. And here's the beginning of that pathway. It's called the atrioventricular node, or AV node, These are not conducting myocytes. I mean, these are not contracting myocytes. These are myocytes that are specialized for conducting electrical signals, but they're even more special because they do it very slowly. So when an electrical signal comes down through the SA node and stimulates the AV node kind of holds on to that signal for maybe a quarter of a second or so, because AV node is slow to react, and then it stimulates a special little, you could almost consider this like a wire, right? But it's just some nodal tissue that passes through, what is it passing through right here? The fibrous skeleton. So here's just a special pathway through the fibrous skeleton that takes that electrical signal into the ventricles. Okay, and this special pathway from the atria into the ventricles is called the atrioventricular bundle, or sometimes it's named after the person that discovered it. It's called the bundle of His. Okay, bundle of His and or AV bundle are exactly the same. Okay, so that's the pathway into the ventricles. And you know what? If somebody ever has a heart attack in this region, then that pathway is blocked, and then that person's heart no longer is coordinated. The atria beat at one rhythm and then the ventricles beat at a totally different rhythm because there's no way for the heart to coordinate itself because this AV bundle has been damaged. All right, then the electrical signal splits as it moves into the septum, interventricular septum, and it moves really, really rapidly down to this part of the heart. What is this part of the heart called? That's the apex. And these are what we call the bundle branches. So that electrical signal is transmitted very slowly in the AV node, but extremely rapidly in the bundle branches down over here. So it zips down to the apex of the heart, and now that electrical signal starts to escape, right, like this super freeway right here, super highway. It enters Purkinje fibers, that's what all these little branches are, and the job of the Purkinje fibers is to spread that electrical signal to all of the myocytes that are in the heart. And when that electrical signal spreads throughout all the contractile cells of the heart, guess what the heart does? It contracts. Okay. All right, so notice where we see Purkinje fibers, way down here at the apex of the heart, and then it travels back up the free walls of the ventricles, back up toward the base of the heart. So that means that the apical sections of the ventricle contract a little bit sooner than the more basilar regions of the heart. All right, so I think that should be a good thing, and you should probably visualize why that is. Okay, let's just say, for instance, what were to happen to blood flow if the basilar regions or the basal regions of the ventricle started to contract before the apical regions. Which way would blood flow if it was in here? The heart would try to pump it inferiorly down into the apex. And where could it go once it got into the apex? It would get trapped. Yeah, it would just get trapped down there, right? And I don't know, maybe it would blow the heart up or something, like a balloon, and there'd be blood all over the place. Probably not that dramatic, but it wouldn't have any place to go. So the apical regions contract first, forcing blood where? Back up to the base and into the great arteries at the base of the heart. So it forces blood up. So even though we want to appreciate that the heart has to contract as a unit to eject blood, to pump blood, it still has this kind of fine detail of coordination, namely, what chambers have to contract first? Both atria contract first, but also in unison, they contract together. And then the ventricles contract. But then again, you should remember there's a little special detail there too, and that is that the apical region contracts first, forcing blood up toward the base of the heart and out into the arteries. Okay? And what coordinates the contraction of the heart so that both atria contract followed by both ventricles just in that way? What special system does the heart have? What special system is that? That is the nodal system. Yeah, the conducting system of the heart that has those nodal fibers, not the contractile cells. So the conducting system of the heart. All right, so you should know these five parts of the conduction system. Which one is the pacemaker? Yeah, the SA node. How does the signal, what delays the signal? that allows the atria to contract first before the ventricles. That is, that's really important. That's part of it. But more importantly, I'm thinking like the AV node. Delays the electrical signal, right? And what is that special pathway? Okay, yeah, the bundle of His that takes the signal through the fibrous skeleton of the heart. Otherwise, that electrical signal can't even get into the ventricles. And then what is a really fast superhighway that takes the electrical signal rapidly to the apex of the heart? Yeah, bundle branches. And then lastly, those special nodal cells that stimulate all of the muscles of the ventricles to contract. Those are those Purkinje fibers. Okay. So make sure you can at least label this, but be able to answer those questions too, the function of these different nodal cells that make up the heart. Okay. And I guess we're doing pretty well. All right. Well, every once in a while, something terrible happens to the heart. Let's go back and look at this picture right here. We said that all the cells of the myocardium have gap junctions between them, right? So if you stimulate one cell to electrically, that electrical signal can travel to all the rest of the cells of the heart. And every once in a while, when a part of the heart is damaged, maybe blood supply is cut off to it by a plaque in a blood vessel or something, one of these cells, right, in some strange place will initiate an electrical signal, okay? And that electrical signal will then start wandering around throughout the heart, okay? And it might go around in kind of a circular pattern. And it's not coordinated by the conduction system of the heart, right? Because there are gap junctions between cells. It can wander around. And as that electrical signal wanders around, just follow my cursor, as the electrical signal kind of follows around the heart like that, what happens to the heart cells as it passes through them? They contract, okay? But first, here's a little line here that contracts, and then there's a little line over here that contracts, and then maybe it might move up over here and contract over here. So now what's happening to the heart? How should the heart contract? First, the atria, and then the ventricles from the apex up, right? Atria, then the ventricles up to the apex up to the base. But if that current is circling around inside the heart, guess how the heart contracts with the atria and ventricles? It just kind of sits there and does this. All right? And when it's sitting there doing this, guess what's happening to blood? It's just not being pumped out. It's staying inside the heart. We call that fibrillation, as that electrical signal is just kind of wandering around on the surface of the heart and through those myocytes. And, all right, blood isn't being pumped to the brain. And what does your brain need to stay functioning? Oxygen to make ATP. How fast does your brain use up ATP if no oxygen is being pumped, like when somebody's heart is in fibrillation? Fast, I like that. But give me a ballpark figure in minutes or seconds or hours or something like that. I think we talked about this at the way beginning of the class. 3 seconds. Okay. After your heart is in fibrillation for 3 seconds, you run out of ATP in the brain because not enough oxygen is going up there, and you pass out. You lose consciousness. All right. But you also need ATP to keep that brain alive. All right. And if the heart is not pumping blood to it, the brain is eventually going to die. How long can your brain survive, or when does it die when it's run out of oxygen? What's that period of time? 3 seconds and you lose function. What period of time and then your brain actually dies? 3 minutes. Okay, so there's a little bit of a range. If you were to say 5 minutes, that's a pretty good guess. But I just say 3 seconds and 3 minutes because it's easier to remember, right? And so when somebody goes into fibrillation, there is something that certain trained individuals can do to preserve the life of that person. And there are probably many people in here that are trained to do that. How can you beat somebody's heart for them when it's not beating by itself? Yes, CPR, right? So you have to be trained in chest compressions. And when you compress somebody's heart, that pressurizes the blood inside the heart and it squirts out in the right direction, right? Why does the blood in somebody's heart only moves in the correct direction when you do a chest compression? Because these valves in here prevent it from going backwards. Okay, so that's a way that you can beat somebody's heart when their heart is in fibrillation, or if it stops in, for instance, what we call asystole, not fibrillation, it just actually stops beating altogether. All right, so if somebody passes out and don't feel a pulse, chest compressions are really nice, and it's actually, is that easy to do or hard work? Anybody ever do that? Yeah, it's kind of hard work. Maybe if you're in high school and really young and an athlete, it's probably not such a big deal, okay? But as you grow up, it gets actually harder and harder to do that. So if you're the only one that's CPR certified, but there are other people around, as you're doing chest compressions, you might want to try to train them a little bit to help you take over after a couple minutes, because it's actually kind of hard work to do that. Okay. And of course, you should never stop doing CPR, at least when you're in a city like this, until paramedics arrive or you get professional help, right? Because the brain can be damaged so easily and quickly when it doesn't have oxygen, right? So don't stop. So if I were to go into fibrillation and you know that somebody's brain dies in 3 minutes, don't stop doing CPR on me after 3 minutes. Pretend that my brain will stay alive for like 2 hours, all right? So don't stop doing CPR for at least 2 hours, right, if that happens to me. Okay. All right, just keep doing it. Okay, well, I want to relate something about the heart to the nervous system that you're going to be tested on Monday. All right, there's a division of the nervous system that helps regulate the heart. Is that the somatic nervous system or the autonomic nervous system? Autonomic nervous system, right? Somatic goes to voluntary muscles. Like, what's a voluntary muscle?
Skeletal
muscle, right? Yeah, biceps, triceps, that kind of thing. Okay. The heart is involuntary muscle. You really can't control how it's beating or if it's going to beat or if it's going to stop. It's taken care of by the autonomic nervous system. And how many divisions of the autonomic nervous system are there that you are aware of?
Two.
There are two. Sympathetic and parasympathetic. Both divisions go to the heart. Now, why is that a really good thing? Why are there two divisions of that autonomic nervous system and not just one nerve? Because they're antagonistic to each other, right? One will speed up the heart, which is which one?
Sympathetic,
and the other, namely the parasympathetic, will slow it down. And right at the heart, those two signals are mixed together so that your autonomic nervous system has precise control and balance over your heart rate, because it's a really good thing to be able, for your body to be able to control the heart rate. All right, so that's why the autonomic nervous system goes there. All right, so the vagus nerve, oh, what is that? Oops, I almost told you. What kind of nerve is the vagus nerve? Number 10, 10 what? Yes. Number 10 what? Cranial or spinal nerve? Yeah, it's a cranial nerve. Okay, number 10. And that gets information from the cardioregulatory center in the brain, right? Namely the medulla oblongata. And it sends signals to the SA node and AV node. And when it does, it slows the pacemaker down and it slows your heart rate. Okay, the sympathetic nerve, right, again, comes from the cardioregulatory center in the medulla, right? And that comes, what, not from a cranial nerve, because sympathetic is not cranial sacral, it's what, thoracolumbar outflow, right? So it passes through the sympathetic chain ganglia, it goes to the SA node and AV node, and it speeds up the rate of impulse conduction through these nodal cells. It speeds up the rate of impulse generation by the SA node, increasing heart rate. But there are also some sympathetic nerves that go to the ventricles. And when it goes to the ventricles, not only does it speed up the rate of the heart, but it also increases the force of contraction. So if the heart is beating more forcefully, guess what happens to blood that's being pumped? It pumps more blood as well. Not just because of the rate, but because of the force of contraction. So if you ever were driving down the freeway and you thought for sure you were going to die in a car accident, like you could see it happening in front of you, and you go, I got no place to go, I'm going to get crushed by a couple big trucks, all right, and then somehow you get out of it, okay, and what's happening to your heart just as you pass the accident, you escaped with your life? What's your heart doing? It's still beating, it's beating fast, but what else is it doing? Some of you might not have experienced that. It's not just beating fast, it's pounding, right? It's like jumping out of your chest. The force of contraction and the rate have both increased, because that's what the sympathetic nervous system does. Increases both the rate, which we call a chronotropic effect, right? Chrono has to do with time, like a chronograph would be a watch that you wear, but it also has an inotropic effect. Inotropic means force of contraction. So there are two ways that the sympathetic nervous system can control your heart function. One is by increasing the rate, but also force of contraction. So one effect is called chronotropy, the other is called inotropy. Okay. So this is a pretty fun chapter, but we're done with it. Okay? All right, so make sure you know all your exam figures for the heart. All right, so next we got to talk about something about blood vessels. And what is that? Probably 19? All right, so chapter 19 will not be on the test on Monday, but it will be on the next test.
Is it blood vessels?
Yeah, blood vessels will be on the final. Okay. All right, so I gotta get to some lecture notes for blood vessels. All right, so you know a lot about blood vessels already. Namely, what kind of blood vessel takes blood away from the heart? Takes blood away from the heart? I like artery. All right, and can an artery have deoxygenated blood? Absolutely. Give me the perfect example of an artery that takes deoxygenated blood away from the heart. Pulmonary, because where is it taking it? To the lungs to pick up oxygen, right? So that makes perfect sense. Okay. All right. Well, here we go. Blood vessels. Just like in bones. Just like in the brain and just like in the heart, and the skin, it's important to know about the layers that make up these tissues. And that's especially important and will become more and more important as time goes on clinically. We got to know the layers that make up a blood vessel. Because is there ever a case where somebody's blood vessels become diseased? Absolutely. Vascular disease is a huge problem, right? Atherosclerosis, for instance, aneurysms in blood vessels, and blood vessel disease has to do with the layers that make up a blood vessel. So we're going to have to be really familiar with the layers of the blood vessels so that we can diagnose disease, we can stage disease, and if you know disease is in there, you know what stage it is, then people can come up with therapies to fight that kind of disease process, right? But if you don't know anything about the layers, then you're clueless on what to do. All right, so we don't want to be clueless. So there are three main layers that make up all blood vessels, whether they're arteries or veins or capillaries, but we'll see capillaries are really special. Okay, the layer on the outside is called the tunica externa. There's a middle layer called the tunica media, and then there is a layer called the tunica intima. And this is how we talk about these different layers. The tunica externa, right, is mostly connective tissue made out of collagen. Some contain elastic fibers. So some vessels, if they have a lot of elastic fibers, what can they do? They can expand, and then they contract back down to their original size. All right? And the tunica externa is important because it strengthens the walls of these blood vessels and also helps anchor it to a certain part of your body so it doesn't start running around inside your body as blood is flowing through it. And as a matter of fact, some blood vessels are so big that they have to have their own blood supply in the wall of a blood vessel. And those arteries that supply blood to a blood vessel because they're so thick is called the vasa vasorum. That's a blood vessel within a blood vessel. Okay, the tunica media is circular smooth muscle. We find these in medium-sized blood vessels and small ones. All right, and that is important because these arteries contain so much pressure that they would actually expand and blow up if there wasn't muscle holding them together. And this is the layer that contains most of the elastic connective tissue. All right, and large blood vessels. So what's the largest artery that you know of?
The aorta.
The aorta, okay? And the aorta has a lot of elastic tissue. Not so much muscle tissue, but a lot of elastic tissue. All right, and then the last layer is the tunica intima. It's made out of an endothelium. Endothelium is just a special way of saying epithelium, but it's lining the inside of the tube, the lumen of the tube. And if you have blood flowing through a tube, should that surface be really smooth and slippery, or should it be rough and jagged like sandpaper? Smooth and slippery, because if it was rough and jagged as blood was flowing over it, it would cause the blood to clot. And then blood couldn't flow through that blood vessel anymore. And if it's a blood vessel going to your brain, what would happen in 3 seconds? You'd pass out, and then in 3 minutes, you would die. Okay. So that endothelium, right, should be really smooth and slippery so that we don't have blood clots moving through it. All right, so here are some of the types of blood vessels that we see. And basically, I see three different kinds, right, with a couple little minor sections. We have a vessel that's taking blood away from the heart. That's an artery. We have a blood vessel taking blood toward the heart. That's a vein. And then here are the tiny, tiny blood vessels that are so thin, if we look at this thing right here, see how thin it is compared to a vein or an artery, this is the only kind of blood vessel where exchange can take place, and that's a capillary. All right, so two other little minor exceptions is that we can have like tiny arteries, we call these arterioles, and we can have tiny veins, and we call those venules, right? But they all have all the same kinds of layers. All right, so here is the tunica externa, which is connective tissue, right? It might contain a little bit of elastic tissue. And then we got the tunica media. So if we look at this layer right here, what layer do you mostly see, like this red thing right here? Muscle, smooth muscle with some more elastic connective tissue, right? And then finally, the tunica intima, which contains this endothelium and like a little basement membrane to connect the endothelium to the wall of the vessel. So this vessel is way too thick to allow for exchange to take place. All right, but when blood gets into a capillary, notice how thin it is. It is only made up of the tunica intima. It only has one layer, namely the endothelium and this basement membrane right here. So this is thin. This allows for exchange. And we're going to actually see three different kinds of capillaries specialized to allow different amounts of exchange. So capillaries you should think of as being pretty leaky, right? They leak material, right? But that material is important to support the living processes of the cells that surround that capillary. So when there's a network of capillaries right here supporting the living processes of cells around it, we call that a capillary bed. And when blood flows through this capillary bed, we say that these cells are being perfused with blood. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? That's a fantastic thing, because when a capillary bed has perfusion, it's bringing oxygen and nutrients to those cells so that they can stay alive, like your heart, your brain, your kidneys, and things like that. All right, so a vein you see right here has the same layers, like the tunica externa, right? It's about the same size compared to an artery. I don't see much in the way of elastic tissue, and the muscle layer is much thinner, and the reason is because one of these vessels has much higher pressure than the other. How is blood going to flow? What is moving blood from one region of your body to another? This is some, like, physics. Why does blood want to move from one area of your body to another? Gravity works, yeah? Okay. Valves will allow for blood flow in one direction, okay? But the reason why a fluid is going to flow from one area to another is due to pressure. And that's the job of the heart. It generates a lot of pressure, and fluid will flow from an area of high pressure to low pressure. So arteries have to have high pressure, veins have to have low pressure so that blood flows from arteries to veins. All right? And since high pressure is in arteries, they have to be stronger. Since there's really low pressure in a vein, they don't have to be as strong, and hence you don't see much of a muscle layer. It's not nearly as thick compared to what you see on an artery over here. All right, but nonetheless, veins still should have that nice, smooth, slippery endothelium, right? And how would you characterize this endothelium right here? Guess what? You got to go back to your tissues chapter. All right. What are the four kinds of tissues? Let's see if we can start to straighten that out. What are the four kinds of tissues again? In your body. You only got four kinds.
Epithelium.
You got epithelium, yeah, you're right. Epithelium, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. Okay. And this endothelium right here is which one of those four? Is it epithelium, connective, muscle, or nervous tissue?
Epithelium.
It's epithelium. And what do you know about epithelium? How could you characterize an epithelium? What are the two ways? Shape and? Layers. Shape and layers. All right, so let's look at these cells. What's the shape here? What are the shapes? Squamous, cuboidal, or columnar? Which one do these look like? Squamous. All right. Now, how many layers do you see? One, which means it's a simple squamous epithelium. So an endothelium is a simple squamous epithelium. And anytime you have a simple squamous epithelium right here, it is specialized for exchange. It's thin enough so that things can move across that membrane. Okay? So that's what you should appreciate about this capillary right here. Okay. That's why we say exchange all the time. All right, so arteries take blood away from the heart, maybe oxygenated or deoxygenated. Is that true? Okay, give me an example of an oxygenated artery.
Aorta.
Aorta. Give me one where it's deoxygenated.
Pulmonary
artery. Fantastic. All right, but nonetheless, arteries are high pressure because that's the beginning of the circulation, right? That's where the heart puts all that pressure into an artery so that it flows through either the systemic or pulmonary circulation. All arteries are high pressure. The elastic layer is extensive in large arteries that are close to the heart. We call those conducting arteries. Those are the ones that absorb most of the pressure from the heart. So as soon as the heart contracts and pumps all that blood into an artery like a pulmonary trunk or the aorta, those kind of blow up like a balloon because of all the elastic that are in the walls of those arteries. And then, as blood moves away from the heart, the arteries convert from elastic to more muscular. And we call these distributing arteries. Right? And because it has a muscle layer, some of these arteries, right, when the muscle relaxes, guess what happens to these arteries? They can dilate. Or if those muscles are stimulated by the autonomic nervous system, they can contract. We call that vasoconstriction or vasodilation. And those help adjust blood flow through blood vessels in your body. And that's really important because you don't have enough blood in your body to go everywhere at the same time. Your body has to pick and choose where blood is going to go, with the exception of a couple organs. What would be a good example of where you never want to curtail the amount of blood that's going to? What kind of organ do you never want to starve for oxygen? Your heart. But we just got done talking about the brain as well. Another highly metabolic organ are your kidneys. They require almost 20% of your cardiac output to keep them alive. Blood has to flow through kidneys in order for them to stay alive, just like your brain. All right, retina is another organ, but that's pretty tiny compared to your brain and your heart. All right, but other parts of your body, like your digestive tract and muscles, right, require oxygen under certain circumstances. When does a muscle need nutrients and oxygen? When you're exercising, when you're moving them. Okay. When does your digestive tract need oxygen? When it's digesting nutrients, right? Like right after a meal. And guess what? I said that you don't have enough blood to go everywhere in your body at one time, like to your brain, your heart, your kidneys. Your digestive tract right after a meal, and then a big meal like Thanksgiving, and then go run a marathon. And then have all those muscles require oxygen as well. And what did your mom always tell you?
Don't.
When you wanted to go swimming right after lunch.
Yeah,
forget it, because you'd end up with a cramp. Something would misbehave in your body because you just don't have enough blood to go everywhere at one time. Okay? So blood vessels have to vasoconstrict and vasodilate at various times to protect the organs, to make sure that they all have proper nutrients. And you have to exercise some common sense too, right? Like, don't have a big meal, be in what we call a fed state, and then start exercising, because that's going to cause problems. You don't have enough blood to go everywhere. All right, so how is blood flow controlled? Well, if we look at, right, if we look at just a cross-section of a blood vessel, right, here's a blood vessel that's vasodilated, and here's one that is vasoconstricted. The way that we think about how much blood can flow through these is by looking at maybe the radius, right? Here's the radius of that blood vessel, right, like that. That's an R, little R right there. There's just a law of physics that says, right, so in your notes, you might actually want to change that to radius to be really proper, not the diameter. Okay. When your autonomic, what nervous system controls these smooth muscles around blood vessels? Autonomic, that's right. Okay, and there's a little cheat sheet in here that says that sympathetic causes vasoconstriction. So if we change the radius of a blood vessel, all right, let's dilate it by a factor of 2. All right, so we go from 1 centimeter to 2 centimeters. What happens to blood flow? So we're going in this direction from 1 centimeter to 2 centimeters. What happens to blood flow? Somebody's guess might be it increases because you got a bigger tube. But how does it increase? Does it double? We've doubled the size of that blood vessel, but what happens to blood flow? Does it double as well? Does it go up by a factor of 2? And you know what? It doesn't. It's not even close to a factor of 2. It's to the 4th power. So it's not a factor of 2. 4th power means what? 2 to the 4th power, which is what? 2 times, I'm going to fall off the stage, times 2. What's that number? Okay, that's 16. So blood flow goes up by a factor of 16 when you change the radius of that blood vessel. So the way your body can adjust blood flow to various organs very efficiently and rapidly is by changing basically the diameter of that blood vessel dramatically. So that, as a matter of fact, if the radius of a blood vessel changes by a factor of 5, look at blood flow. It goes up by a factor of 625. That's a huge change, right? So small changes in blood vessel diameter relate to huge changes in blood flow through various organs. So that's a really important point about blood vessels. Okay, arterioles. What kind of blood vessel is an arteriole? It's an artery. It's just what? A little artery. And it has a lot of smooth muscles, so it's really specialized to regulate blood flow, right? Because it can change the diameter very rapidly. It can vasoconstrict and vasodilate. And it helps adjust blood flow through organs that need or don't need blood. Okay. All right. Here is a special part. At the entrance to a capillary, there is a sphincter. Who knows what a sphincter is? Yeah. A sphincter is, most cases, almost all cases, it's smooth muscle, okay? And it's a circular smooth muscle that surrounds something that's round, like a blood vessel, okay? We also looked at some skeletal muscles that are circular. What do we call a circular skeletal muscle? Orbicularis, like orbicularis oculi, orbicularis oris, right? So sphincter is like those, except it's under autonomic control, which means then it's a smooth muscle. Okay, so here we have an artery, but it's a tiny one, so it's an arteriole. That's going to supply blood to this capillary right here, and blood is going to flow through the capillary and then be collected by these venules and then taken back to the heart. But at the entrance to each one of these capillary beds, you see some of these circular structures. These are made up of smooth muscle. And if it's that circular smooth muscle, that is called a sphincter, right? So here is what we call a precapillary sphincter. And when these contract, when these smooth muscles contract, guess what happens to blood flow through this capillary bed when they contract? It cuts blood off, like what we see down in this circumstance over here. So when the sphincters are closed, You don't have blood going through this capillary, which is okay for certain kinds of tissues like muscles when you're not exercising, like your muscles in your digestive tract when you're in a fasted state. You don't need to have blood going to those parts of the body, right? So this is a way of regulating blood flow to a particular organ because of these precapillary sphincters. All right, so you might be interested to ask, you know, what controls that? Well, we call that local control. When you start to exercise a skeletal muscle, right, the muscle starts to use up what that's in the blood?
Oxygen.
So an oxygen concentration goes down. What builds up in a muscle when you start to exercise? CO2 starts to build up, okay? And you've probably heard of another compound that builds up inside muscles. And it's the reason why skeletal muscles hurt, like the day after, 2 days later. What's that compound? The lactic acid. So when lactic acid builds up or other acids build up in the cell right here, that's going to cause these sphincters to relax. All right, so what causes these to relax? Decreased oxygen, right? When oxygen is being used up, these sphincters will relax, and what's going to happen? Oxygenated blood is going to come into this capillary bed to bring oxygen back up to the level that it should be to maintain the health of those cells. Right? When you exercise these muscles down here, what's going to build up? Acids and CO2. Acids and CO2 will also cause these to dilate, bring in blood to do what? Wash away all that acid and to take away carbon dioxide to bring the chemical composition of these cells back to where they should be. So when the cells in this neighborhood right here control the state of contraction of these precapillary sphincters, that doesn't require innervation, doesn't require nerves, doesn't require your brain to do that, we call that local control. All right, so precapillary sphincters are controlled locally by the metabolism of the cells that this capillary bed supplies. We call that local control. That's a pretty important concept that you'll probably should take with you to physiology. Okay, that is local control with these precapillary sphincters. All right, well, let's talk about different kinds of capillaries. Okay, that's the smallest blood vessel. What could you tell me about a capillary? What's the function? Exchange. And what do you know about the structure that allows for exchange? Yeah, just a simple squamous epithelium, really thin basement membrane. That's a thin membrane. A diffusion could go across it. That's really good thinking. Okay. But there are some other specializations for capillaries that allow for even more exchange. All right, so I got to find these for you. Where are these at? Well, right here. Next slide. Okay. The three kinds of capillaries. But don't forget, in every case, a capillary just has one layer made up of the basement membrane and the simple squamous epithelium. Basement membrane, simple squamous epithelium, right? Basement membrane, simple squamous epithelium. All right. The standard kind of capillary that we call a continuous capillary. All right, so here we see the endothelial cells, and they butt up against each other pretty tightly. There are tight junctions between them, but every once in a while there is a space between the capillaries that we call the intercellular cleft. And in this space right here, that means that fluid, namely water and small molecules, can actually flow out of a capillary. Right, so material can actually leave a capillary at this point and move across the basement membrane into the, what is that space between cells called? The space between most cells in your body is what we call the extracellular space. Okay, extracellular space. So all these nutrients can enter that extracellular space and surround all the cells in your body. All right, so this is a continuous capillary. If we look at the second kind over here, look at these endothelial cells. They have holes in them, which allows for material not only to move through these intracellular clefts, which are a little bit exaggerated compared to the continuous capillary, but also through these holes over here. Now, what do you call a hole in anatomy?
Foramen.
A foramen. That's good. But we don't call these foramina. Since they're tiny, 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 we call them windows. And the scientific name for window, I think, comes from German. Right, it's called fenestration, okay, or a little tiny pore. So there are pores through the endothelial lining of this kind of capillary. So it's what? More leaky or less leaky? Even more leaky, okay? But now, the size of these pores, does it allow for red blood cells to leave?
No.
Too small. Big macromolecules still can't get through. Only small molecules like water and oxygen, CO2, and other kinds of really small molecules. All right, so the fenestrated kind is more leaky than a continuous kind, and then that takes us to the third kind. All right, look at the intracellular or intercellular clefts. They're huge. The fenestrations are huge. There are even breaks in the basement membrane. So in terms of leakiness, how leaky is this one? This is the most leaky of the three. This one is what we call a sinusoid. It just leaks all kinds of fluid all over the place. So we don't have many of these in our body, but there's a few locations where they're really important. All right, so make sure you know continuous, fenestrated, and sinusoids in order of how leaky they are. All right, but not only can things leave, that means things can also enter more easily as well, right? It could go in both directions. All right, so those are the kinds of capillaries. Venules are just small veins. Right, veins bring, venules will join together to form bigger veins. What do we call it when blood vessels join together to form a bigger vessel? Like when small venules join together to form one big vein. All right, there's the reverse process is when you have one big vessel, all right, splitting into smaller blood vessels. We call that something else too. So when you have an artery splitting into many other smaller arteries, we call that bifurcation. Like if it splits from one to two, that's a bifurcation. But when it goes the other way, when you have a lot of small veins joining together to make one small vein, that's not a bifurcation. We call that an anastomosis. All right, anastomosis. Anastomose, when blood vessels come together. So arteries bifurcate, veins anastomose. Okay, there's a little terminology right there. All right. So now we get to talk a little bit about naming blood vessels. All right, so how many circulations are there in your body?
Two,
pulmonary and systemic circulation. All right, and we kind of did this already. The pulmonary circulation starts with the right ventricle, right? It's got to pump blood through the pulmonary semilunar valve into the pulmonary trunk, and then that bifurcates into the right and left pulmonary arteries. And is that high in oxygen or high in CO2, that blood in those arteries? High in CO2, because it, pulmonary circulation means it's going to the lungs to get rid of that CO2 and pick up oxygen. And then you got capillaries for exchange, and you see there's a definition of exchange, and then blood comes back via pulmonary veins to the heart, and these veins are kind of strange because what are they high in, oxygen or CO2? They're high in oxygen, right? And that brings it back to the left atrium. So your pulmonary circulation, okay, you probably have to look at the cardiac chapter. All right, so that takes us to the systemic circulation, and we're going to start there a week from today, because what do you got on Monday? You got a test. So we don't have a test and a lecture. No lecture on Monday. Any questions about the test coming up? No? Good. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. But here's a question. I got a comment about Blackboard. Hold on. Yeah, hold on about, let me tell you about Blackboard. Okay, so you know, Blackboard has been freaking out lately, losing its identity. I don't know, it's having a schizophrenic embolism or something, since we're talking about the vasculature. If you cannot log in right now, that means that I manually have to change your password for you. And you can see that's kind of problematic because there's a lot of students in the class. So try logging in. And if I have to manually change your password, maybe send me an email and ask me specifically to do that, because supposedly it was all fixed so that if you were to change your, to use the password student, right, if you were to use student, you should be able to log in, but some people still can't do that. So if you tell me I need to change your password, guess what I'm going to change it to? Student, and then you log in. And then in the tools area, go to personal information, change it back to whatever you want. And probably the best thing for you to change it to is the password that you use for My Gateway account, your My Gateway account. And then it will be the same password in Gateway and Blackboard. And that will sometimes alleviate a lot of problems because sometimes the programs don't talk to each other. All right? But also then, you'll have to let me know if you could take the quiz or not take the quiz, and then I'll have to extend the deadline for you to take the quiz that was due last night. Okay? So maybe see me up in lab, because I have lab at noon. I will be happy to change your password in lab today. Okay, so that's it for Blackboard. Starting with central nervous system. Central nervous system.
Autonomic
nervous system. Peripheral nervous system. Senses. Eyes. Yeah, special senses. Then the heart. Yeah. But not blood vessels.
Not the blood or the blood vessels.
Not blood or blood vessels, right. Good. Okay, have a nice weekend.